efforts on behalf of your respective clients. Next case for argument is Scott versus Edinburgh. Mr. Marshevsky.
Please, the court. I'm Tom Marzewski, or as my ancestors would say, Marshevsky. For the plaintiffs, Perry L. Scott et al., representatives of the estate of Philip Scott, decedent. This case involves a de novo standard of review of the district court's summary judgment order. The use of deadly force is not constitutionally permissible unless the suspect poses a significant threat of death or serious bodily injury to an officer or others, and the officer's actions must be objectively reasonable in the light of the facts and circumstances in using deadly force. Almost 4 years ago, on May 17, 1999, Philip Scott entered police officer Rodney Edinburgh's red Mustang convertible. The top was down, and Mr. Edinburgh had left his key in the ignition when he went to go get a hot dog at a nearby hot dog stand. Philip Scott was moving away from Officer Edinburgh.
Is state law that prevents you from leaving your key in the ignition of a parked vehicle in Illinois?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Would you be liable in tort in Illinois for anything that happens to that car if you leave your key in it? You are in many states.
I don't know the answer to that, but if there isn't, there should be. We did not plead that in this case as a direct cause of action. Mr. Edinburgh left the key in the ignition, as we stated. Philip Scott was moving away from Officer Edinburgh. Again, Philip Scott was engaging in theft of his red Mustang top-down convertible, and Officer Edinburgh announced he was a police officer and shot Philip Scott in the back twice. As a result of those gunshots, Philip Scott died within minutes, causing Scott to have an auto accident on the Dan Ryan Expressway, which resulted in injuries, serious injuries to others, where there's a legal action in the Circuit Court of Cook County pending as we speak. On October 29, 1992, the District Court entered summary judgment in favor of Defendant Officer Edinburgh, finding that no genuine issue of material fact existed with regard to whether it was objectively reasonable to believe that Philip Scott posed the threat of death or serious bodily injury to Officer Edinburgh or others. But there's some serious difficulties with the district court's decision, in that the following uncontested facts were present. From a stop position, Philip Scott drove the red Mustang top-down convertible in reverse in a matter of feet in a period of 3 to 4 seconds, and at no time did that red Mustang come within 3 feet of Officer Edinburgh. At no time. Officer Edinburgh, by his own admission, did not fire shots into Philip Scott's back until Philip Scott was driving in a direction away from Officer Edinburgh in Officer Edinburgh's red Mustang top-down convertible.
Precisely when were the first shots fired?
In terms of a moment in time, couldn't say what hour, what minute, what second.
In terms of what was happening.
Yeah, as Officer Edinburgh has testified, and he's really the only one who testified to it, that it was shortly after he stopped going in reverse and when he started going forward. But I think that's why the Ellis versus Ronaldo case with this court is so critical, because there may have been a point in time when an officer is faced with a situation in which he could justifiably shoot, but as the court said in Ellis, he does not retain the right to shoot at any time thereafter with impunity. And that's really how this case is very similar to Ellis, because police officers, generally speaking, shoot at people who aren't pillars of the community. Now, there are exceptions to that, but this is not one. But it's really the inquiry of whether there was a risk of harm at the time. And the fact of the matter is, and in listening to prior arguments, this court doesn't like to be treated as if it's naive. the fact of the matter is, Officer Edinburgh shot his weapon because he wanted to get his convertible back. It's fairly clear. I mean, he was driving in a direction away from him. He wasn't posing any threat of harm to Officer Edinburgh or anybody else. The witness affidavits that were submitted and were uncontested state that no one else was in threat of harm, nor did they feel in threat of harm. They didn't have to flee. The person who trained Officer Edinburgh said it's not proper police procedure to shoot at a moving vehicle. Why? Because that's when you do create danger to other people. If you shoot somebody in the back twice, you can pretty much rest assured that that person will die or at least lose consciousness and will cause the type of serious car accident that occurred in this case. He wanted to get his convertible back, sua sponte, immediately, and that's what he was acting. He was acting out of anger. He testified that he announced the
gun. In this particular case, that we look at this from a subjective rather than an objective point of view. In looking at the officer's justification, he may indeed have had a very impure heart under these circumstances, but the question is whether or not the objective facts are such that he was justified in law in using his service revolver.
The objective facts clearly demonstrate, not even just more likely than that, but I would submit beyond a reasonable doubt, that this officer shot his weapon at his red Mustang top-down convertible where the ignition was in because he was angry and he wanted to get his car back. And that's on a standard of objectivity. That now, when we talk about his
not
anger, that's
responsive to Judge Ripple's point, however.
I think from an objective standpoint,
his
Your Honor,
his state of mind is irrelevant.
His state of mind is irrelevant, but the facts speak to the objective reasonableness in that it was not objectively reasonable for a reasonable officer, which Officer Edinburgh was not in this situation, but assuming that he was, for the sake of discussion and argument, and because the law requires it, the convertible was moving in a direction away from him. He was posing no threat of harm to anyone. Under Ellis, if there was a risk at some point, that has to change when you're not moving in a direction anymore, in your direction. Officer Edinburgh's own testimony said the vehicle never got within 3 feet of him, so how it ever even raised a threat to begin with should be a question of fact for a jury.
I understand the facts are that he was, in effect, retreating as the car backed up, and he's not sure how fast it was going. At some point, he reached for his weapon. If the facts, as I understand it at least, it was somewhere at the time when perhaps the person driving stopped backing up and started going forward, that officer, whatever his name is, shot his gun. And it also, the expert apparently determined that it was the first or second shot that actually was the one that killed him. Now, if you go on, would he shoot 8 times? As he is driving off and he keeps shooting, there's a difference to the point where the car is backing up and he's retreating and the pilot fires the initial shot, isn't there? Or is there?
Well, I don't know that it's exactly clear that it was the first shot out of Officer Edinburgh's gun that entered Philip Scott's back. There were 8 shots fired. I don't think any of the shots on an objective reasonableness standard were objectively reasonable to be fired.
That's what you'd want to be your position. Even the first shot, maybe the second one, while he's, I can't really picture this, is he by a gas pump, or I guess he's off the side, isn't he?
Yeah, he was off the side. He wasn't near a gas pump.
Okay, so there's access. He can go forward or backward.
But shooting near a gas station raises a whole series of questions from an objective reasonableness standard in itself.
Of course, if there are 14 people around, you have that question as well.
So, by the occurrence witness testimony, no one was in the direct path of the vehicle. Officer Edinburgh was not in the path of the vehicle. No one was in danger. The police practice expert, James Marsh, testified that the danger wasn't significant and that the perception and the poor that he used poor judgment, that it was untimely, excessive, and unjustified. This is testimony that would be presented before a jury.
He fired the first shot when the car was backing, didn't he?
No, that's not part of the record, Your Honor. And as I said, it was Officer
Edmonds. It's what the defendant's brief states.
That's an inaccuracy, Your Honor. That's not the testimony.
Can we look at all at the surrounding dangers the officer didn't take into consideration? The gas pumps, the other individuals in the area, things of that nature. Or are we limited to simply the actions of the perpetrator and what the officer saw with respect to the actions of the perpetrator?
Well, the case law talks about in light of the circumstances, and I think that the facts and circumstances of all cases are unique. I think that's something to consider, but I think that's also directly taken care of, even if this was not directly next to a pump, by the fact that it's not proper police procedure by the testimony to enter bullets into someone's back who's driving the vehicle, because then they create a significant danger to the public. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Marchewski. Mr. Puizis?
May it please the Court, for the record, my name is Stephen Puizis. I'm here on behalf of Officer Edinburgh in the Village of Glenwood. A couple of points that I think I'd like to clarify. First of all, Officer Edinburgh, at page 27 of his deposition, said that the car was backing up at the time, or he said the car was backing up. It had not yet stopped at the time he fired his first shot. Specifically, the way the sequence, according to Officer Edinburgh, was, he runs up to he's running up to the car, he says, "Hey, stop, that's my car." He sees the reverse lights come on.
Did he say he was a police officer?
Not until the car started backing up, Your Honor. When the car started backing up in his direction, he said, "Hey, stop, I'm a police officer," and he pulled his weapon. He says he ran backwards at least 6 feet. He's giving estimates. Everything is happening in a matter of moments. He described the car, for example, from shifting from reverse to forward as almost being simultaneous. He says that as the car is backing up towards him, he pulls his service revolver, and before the car stops, he fires his first shot. Plaintiff's own expert, Mr. Marsh, and the plaintiff, I should point out, in response to our Rule 56 Statement of Uncontested Facts, in the district court, the plaintiffs acknowledged that their liability expert testified that Officer Edinburgh reasonably perceived Philip Scott as attempting to run him over with his car after he had identified himself as a police officer. I submit under the standard Tennessee versus Garner, Officer Edinburgh was permitted to use deadly force under those circumstances. Dr. Kalikar, I believe if you look at her affidavit carefully, she said bullet number one was the fatal wound. She goes on to say that there were two shots that struck him in the back, and the two shots were fired while in rapid proximity, one to the other. It's undisputed that Officer Edinburgh fired two rounds in the gas station. One before the car stopped, the second one as it began pulling forward. Officer Edinburgh said that in the moment as that car started pulling forward, he could see several people standing 15 to 20 feet ahead of him.
But that's a disputed fact.
Well, if I could get into that, Your Honor, there is at least 4 to 5 reasons why I submit that those affidavits do not constitute competent summary judgment evidence. So I would submit that it's really not a disputed fact. And if I could, first of all, those affidavits are boilerplate conclusory. I cited in our brief the Fifth Circuit decision in Reese versus Anderson because that was the closest case I could find to the affidavits presented in the district court level. And just as in this case, in the Fifth Circuit, in Reese, the plaintiff presented an affidavit that said at no time was the police officers in any danger from the decedent. And the Fifth Circuit said that that might work in Carol's Wonderland, but it doesn't work in the Fifth Circuit, because under Celotex, what you have to present is facts, not conclusions. So I submit that under Reese, the affidavits are clearly conclusory. They're not competent summary judgment evidence. A second reason, and I go back to this court's decisions in Smith versus Ball State University and Smith versus City of Chicago. In both of those cases, this court affirmed the entry of summary judgment when the evidence that was presented in opposition was not drawn from the officer's perspective. For example, in Smith versus City of Chicago, the plaintiff testified that he didn't know that the men who were following him were police officers. He never heard the siren, and this court said, well, that may be true, but that's not taken from the officer's perspective. In the Ball State case, what happened is the plaintiff had a diabetic coma, or went into diabetic shock, and he literally could not communicate with two police officers who stepped into his car, turned off the ignition, and then tried to pull him out of the car. Because he was basically unconscious and couldn't assist, the officers were having difficulty getting him out of the car. A third officer happens on the scene. He sees the first two officers struggling with that third officer. He perceives this as resistance. He literally jumps over the car like you would see in an old Starsky and Hutch movie, tries to do a knee drop on the man who's pulling out of the car, knocks all three of them down, and the plaintiff is injured in the process. This court accepted as true the fact that the plaintiff wasn't resisting arrest, but they said that does not warrant the denial of summary judgment because
the question is simply the location of the bystanders in relation to the car. Why aren't the bystanders competent to say, you know, I wasn't standing in front of the car?
Because we have no idea where the bystanders are, Your Honor. If you look at the affidavit, there is nothing presented as to where they were. There is no information or evidence presented as to where these other 12 to 14 people were at any point as the vehicle moved through the gas station parking lot. All you have is bald-faced conclusions. There is no facts in those affidavits from which this court can justify or judge whether or not Officer Edinburg, whether or not he rightfully perceived those two people in the path of the car. The other two points, or several other points I would like to make, is that at the time Officer Edinburg fired that second round, he didn't know for certain what was going to be the ultimate path of the vehicle. He knew there were 12 to 14 people in front of him, or somewhere out there. He saw two of them, he believed, in front of the car. Does the officer have to wait until the car runs someone over before he fires a weapon? I submit not.
No, I agree with you, but how do we know that he's telling the truth about the two people? If all the people there give affidavits saying they weren't in any danger from the car, they weren't in front of the car, why isn't that admissible evidence?
Well, because it's conclusory. It's not drawn from the officer's perspective. It's also, if I could, there's several other reasons.
But I don't understand. I mean, the officer, he ought to be able to tell whether someone is standing in front of the car or not. So if a person says, I wasn't standing in front of the car, why doesn't that create a jury issue?
Well, it doesn't create a jury question because it's not material for another reason. Remember, in Tennessee versus Garner, the danger has to be others. In Ford versus Childers, this court said that if someone threatens others in the immediate vicinity, an officer can use deadly force under those circumstances. Being in the direct path of the vehicle is not the test. Judge Norberg correctly recognized that it was legally irrelevant. Even the plaintiff's expert, again, Marsh, if you look at his testimony, he said that Officer Edinburg reasonably perceived that Philip Scott posed a threat to those 12 or 14 other people in the parking lot. he said that those people were in the general area of vulnerability of the vehicle. He said that Officer Edinburgh was reasonable when he fired that second shot. Or, I'm sorry, he said it was justified but not reasonable. Then when we asked him, well, what's the difference? He said, well, if it's justified, it's reasonable, and then he backtracked and said, it may not be the safest way, or you have to use less deadly alternatives.
What about the other six shots? Is that something we need to focus on?
Plaintiffs never focused on it. We didn't focus on it in light of the fact that it's uncontradicted and undenied from Dr. Kalatar that the shots that were fired in the gas station parking lot, and there were only two, were the fatal bullet wounds. Dr. Kalatar, in fact, in her deposition, I believe, testified that the shots were fired from a range of either 2 feet or 10 feet away. So as the car was traveling northbound down State Street some distance away, it's clear based on Dr. Kalatar's opinions that those never struck Mr. Scott. And so again,
Your opponent says that these affidavits not only talk about the affiant positions or endangerment, but also say that the car wasn't backing up when Edinburgh fired. Don't they say that?
They take that position, Your Honor.
Well, but aren't they competent to?
How can those witnesses contradict their admission in the Rule 56 statement?
Oh, no, that's a separate point. Right. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Kucis. Mr. Marshevsky, how much time does he have? No time? Well, we'll give you a minute if you'd like to reply.
When lawyers extract things from depositions, sometimes there's the exact opposite thing that's said. At page 31 of Rodney Edinburgh's deposition, line 20 through 22, at the time you fired the first shot, was the vehicle backing up, standing still, or moving away from you? Answer, moving away from me. The district court applied a standard of most favorable to the movement in this case. There's certainly issues of fact for the jury. And he extracted one quote from plaintiff's police practice expert, James Marsh, but the deposition transcript of James Marsh is littered with his opinions that he believed that the shooting was unjustified and unconstitutional and the standard of objective reasonableness. So I submit that, you know, there are certain areas of inquiry that are the subject of examination and cross-examination before a jury in this case, but there's certainly, in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, a genuine issue of material fact. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Marshevsky and Mr. Kucis.